From somewhere in Northeast Indiana, Mike Davidson lives. And now your host of the podcast, Mike Davidson.
Salads are fattening. Exercise will kill me. Some things my brother once said. Yeah, they're not true, but I gotta tell you, feels kind of true last couple of days. Hell yes, Mr. Rob Roop, thank you very much. It's me, Mike. Mike Davidson Lives is the podcast. Thanks for hanging out with me for the next half hour, give or take. Glad you downloaded. Glad you're listening. Post Mother's Day weekend edition. If you're a mom, I hope you enjoyed it. If you have a mom in your life, you know, yours, maybe your spouse, maybe, you know, your mother-in-law. Yeah, you should have told everybody that's a mom in your life, Happy Mother's Day. Yeah, as long as they're not like Norman Bates' mom or something. Pretty decent weekend. I basically did whatever my wife needed me to do. And something we hadn't done for a while. Well, Saturday, she worked Sunday. So Saturday, we did all the funnish stuff. Well, most of the funnish stuff. She wanted me to go to the gym with her. She's trying to, you know, get into shape. It's been a while since I've been to the gym. I'm coming off of that long-ass summer cold where I was just hacking for, like, the last 2 weeks. By the way, I can breathe now. Everything's cool. And, you know, the goal is if you're not at the gym, if you don't go to the gym often, don't overdo it. Don't try. You're not there to impress anybody. You're trying to get a feel for what you can do. And for the most part, you know, I thought I... Because, like I said, it's been a while since I've exercised. I thought I kept things scaled down pretty well. Or maybe I'm just that out of shape. Because the next day, everything hurt. Sunday, everything hurt. Monday, everything still hurt. And Tuesday, because I'm recording this Monday night. Tuesday morning when I go into work, yeah, I'm going to be doing some Tylenol before I do anything strenuous. But, you know, it is important to get into shape. And I'll talk more about that here in a little bit because I got a story in the stack. Also, you know, my wife got off early Sunday afternoon, so we set up the bouncy house outside in the backyard and watched the kids basically get tangled up in it. And instead of just jumping in it, they had to turn off the bouncy house and have the thing collapse on them, and then one of them had to run it. Yeah, my children are weird. But I got my wife some adult libations, some wine cooler type things, you know, and she only drank one. And then she went into the house for a little bit. I couldn't figure out what she was doing. She went to the bedroom and just fell asleep, napped. And she woke, she wasn't like fall down drunk or anything like that. But when she woke up an hour or two later and we were hanging out, she goes, "That I was just so tired and that drink wrecked me. I got low alcohol tolerance." So I don't know if she's going to drink the rest of those wine coolers. Not that I want to, because I got my beer. But the thing is like, she shouldn't feel bad about that. I've got kind of a low alcohol tolerance, because it only takes a beer or two for me to feel buzzed anymore. Not that I'm looking to get tore up or anything. So, I mean, I guess that's a sign of maturity when you know you can't do 12 drinks in an afternoon. Not that my wife has ever tried to do 12 drinks in an afternoon. She's a little more responsible than me. R.I.P. Roger Corman, legendary director of the B-movie. 300 films, got an honorary Oscar in 2009. Directed, produced more than 300 films. And some of the careers he launched: Ron Howard, Sylvester Stallone, James Cameron, Robert De Niro, Martin Scorsese, Jonathan Demme, and Francis Ford Coppola, just to name a few. Either actors or filmmakers in their own right. And that just kind of goes to show you that even if you're involved in kind of a mess, and let's be honest, a B-film is not exactly The Godfather or Goodfellas, but you could go on to make The Godfather or Goodfellas. It's the experience that counts, and Roger Corman gave a lot of guys their experience getting into film. And so, yeah, he was a huge influence on Tinseltown. And thoughts, condolences, the whole nine to family and friends of the late, great Roger Corman. Steve Buscemi, man, one of my favorite actors. You know, Reservoir Dogs, Fargo, bunch of great movies with that guy. Unfortunately, hit in the face over the weekend in his native New York City. He's going to be okay. Just took him by shock. Cops are looking into it, but it was a random thing, which means they're probably not going to find the douche that did it. But for a little guy, you know, funny little guy, as he was called in Fargo. No, he's just funny looking. You know, he was a firefighter and did, in fact, help firefighters clean up after 9/11. And he's also broken up a barroom brawl involving Vince Vaughn, in which he got stabbed by a couple guys and turned out okay. Steve Buscemi, for a little dude, pretty effing tough. And it sucks that it happened to him, and looks like he's going to be okay, which is good. But, you know, when you hear just a random person walks up and punches you in the face, it really doesn't sell anybody on New York City in terms of a vacation destination for the summer, does it? Not really. All right. I'm kind of torn about this. Because I really love Shogun. If you haven't already, it's on Hulu. FX ran it. Now it's there, all 10 episodes. Great series. Very well done. Very well written, acted, etc., etc. They are now going to do Shogun Season 2 with Hiroiki Sanada returning as the lead. Of course, Lord Toranaga. Great character, right? Here's why I'm torn. That first season, that one season that we thought this was a mini-series for. We thought this was a mini. So perfect, so good. Why build on it? As a standalone, it's great. And from what I understand, they exercised a lot of the original source material with this. So where do you go? Well, you know, you start to write your own stuff, right? This is where it gets dicey, because we know how Hollywood is nowadays. If you're straying from the original source material, can you... Because, you know, James Clavell, that was his work. He's not involved in the series, no. He kind of can't at this point. The thing here is... Hollywood has a history of taking something that's great and running it into the ground and getting the message wrong, or taking the tone of the series and getting it wrong. Westworld, that first season of that show was awesome. Fantastic. In fact, Sanada, I believe, was in season 2 of that. Yeah. That first season of Westworld was great. Based on the movie that Michael Crichton wrote and directed. It wasn't a book. It was something that he was a screenplay. He directed it. Then season 2 was meh. Season 3, flaming bag of dog shit. And nobody could bother with season 4. So it was canceled. It went into the dustbin of forgotten television shows. It went from critical acclaim to, what is this garbage? That's my fear for Shogun. I think not all TV series have to run for long periods of time now. This isn't like the old days where you're on the networks, you have to have a good show that runs 100 episodes, and then it's in syndication. If it's solid, you'll find it streaming someplace. And I think that's the case with Shogun. And again, right now, as it stands as a mini, I highly recommend it. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe this is not a Westworld thing, and maybe it's more of a Better Call Saul thing, where, you know, everybody had their skepticism about Better Call Saul being the prequel to Breaking Bad, and it ends up being its own animal. Kind of a wait-and-see thing with that. I don't know. All right, let's get into protests, because protesters are dumb. They really are. And this past weekend... graduation weekend for some universities. Duke University, this is one of those rare times where I'm actually jealous of Duke, and at the same time, proud of Duke. If you're a basketball fan, you know what I'm talking about. Jerry Seinfeld spoke at the commencement. And, you know, he's a college graduate. I think a lot of people forget that because, you know, he's on stage, he's a stand-up comedian, And he's been very successful with that whole comedy TV show thing, right? So he's speaking at the commencement, and because he is Jewish, and because he is a big supporter of Israel, a lot of these college kids, 30 of them, got up and walked out, you know, in support of Palestine, or, you know, Hamas, in support of Hamas. And this is such a small fragment of the actual body that was there to watch the commencement. I think of the people there, I think somebody said that that was like only 0.4% of the student body that got up and walked out, if that at all. Yeah. But of course the press gave them all this stuff, and I saw segments of this speech at Seinfeld gave. It's really good. It's really funny. It's self-deprecating. It doesn't get too political. You know, he knows how to work a crowd. That's what he does. But it's a very... It may be just because I didn't have that commencement speaker when I was at Ball State. You know, we got the political, you know, dreamy crap. Whereas here you have a guy that graduated from college and said, screw it, I'm going to be a stand-up comedian. You know, hey, let's do a TV show, and look at me, I'm a billionaire. He's a self-made billionaire doing what he loves. And these kids who are so wrapped up in a political circumstance that they do not know one red thing about get up and walk out because they know everything. But he was really good, and I'll try to find some segments and try to log that up, link that up on the podcast page here, but it sucks that they think this way. Like, it's not just a disagreement over Israel and Hamas. It's, okay, you like Israel, you're Jewish, we're out of here. It's crazy to me. By the way, another, kind of staying in a Tar Heel state, again, another North Carolina school that I'm jealous of that I normally wouldn't be of. UNC, the Tar Heels. As you know, the frat boys down there stopped the pro-Hamas crowd from tearing down the American flag. Got a lot of press. Everybody loves these dudes. The board of trustees at UNC, big-time university, has voted to defund the DEI program there and give the money to the police. Defund DEI because of all this craziness. Because a lot of people are starting to realize, well, okay, diversity isn't necessarily a virtue or a vice. It's just a mix. It's what you have in terms of, you know, race, in terms of gender, ideology, whatever. The ideology part is very strong here, because they're starting to realize that, hey, a lot of these people protesting don't really give a shit about the country that gives them the right to protest, and they're willing to desecrate something that is sacred to many people here to show how much they hate it. It's not just about protesting with these people. They have to show how much they hate everything in a society that gives them a lot, and the freedom to protest everything. So for the Board of Trustees to turn around and say, okay, these diversity programs, they're not really meshing and melding everybody into common ground. They seem to be separating, segregating, if you will. For them to say, no, I think it's a positive step, because a lot of people are getting sick and tired of it. You know, and it's not, people are not just getting their news from news anymore or news networks. A lot of people will go to social media and see these viral videos, on Twitter X, on wherever. And when they're seeing this, there isn't that yeah and or yeah but filter that you might get with the press. So, I think that's a positive step right there. By the way, kind of keeping with this, Princeton, the Hamas crowd, the pro-Hamas crowd up there, changing the rules when it comes to hunger strikes. These students were going to starve themselves until they got their way. After 10 days, they ended their hunger strike. Well, let's be fair. They didn't really end it. They just ended their shift. They're treating this like a job or a tour of duty. So the students that were on a hunger strike for 10 days, they are no longer fasting. The next wave of students are coming in to relieve them, to starve themselves. Yeah, that's not what a hunger strike is. You don't eat until you get your way or you pass out. They tapped out. This is just sad. That is sad. Oh, my goodness. Switching gears, kind of, from pro-Hamas to anti-Western civilization. I know, what's the difference, right? Over the weekend in the UK, a couple of 80-year-olds got in trouble. They're part of that Just Stop Oil movement. Those people that like to throw crap on things and block roadways and anything that has any significance, cultural significance to Western civilization, they will try to destroy. And they try to break in and damage a copy of the Magna Carta. There's only 4 copies remaining. And even if they got through and damaged it, I don't think we would be plunged into chaos yet. But, you know, they're saying this because of oil. We're not free because of oil companies. You know, this is symbolic. No. It's symbolic because they hate the fact that you benefit from oil companies. Yes, I did not misspeak there. And I'm well aware that gas prices suck ass. Believe me, I know. But because I have access to gas, no matter how pricey it is, I can move my vehicle wherever I want to within reason, as can you. You can drive where you want to go. It's not just big oil and their profits. It's the fact that there is such a reliance on big oil and the fact that we use it to move our vehicles, not just to, run street drag races like in Fast and Furious, but to actually live our lives day to day. And oil is not just used in vehicles. It's used in all sorts of plastics, all sorts of medicines. It is used for a variety of things. And it is something very essential to how we keep society moving. They're not thinking about this, or maybe they know about this. They don't care. And they're just doing it to do it. But I would be concerned whenever somebody is trying to damage a copy of a very important document from the 13th century that says no one's above the law. And basically kind of the grandfather or great-grandfather to the Constitution, the Bill of Rights here stateside. That the Declaration of Independence, like all of that. The just man yearns to be free. Man can't be free from government. More government is bad for man. More oil for man, not so much. My 2 cents. Okay, I just said to talk a little more about this from early in the broadcast. Yeah, salads are fattening. Exercise will kill me. Salad is only fattening if you pour like 2 cups of ranch on it, like we do here in the Midwest. But former diet maven Oprah Winfrey has confessed her sin. This was in a YouTube special Thursday. And she was talking about how she was involved with all these diet gimmicks. She was in the diet culture. Infamous now, I guess. Some things don't age well. Back on her show, her afternoon talk show, where she lost a buttload of weight, I think like 67 pounds. And symbolically, she came out onto the show dragging a wagon behind her with 67 pounds of fat. I think this was like from the butcher shop or something. You know, symbolically, it wasn't her fat. But 67 pounds of fat in this wagon and showing off her very lean look. And then she said, you know, immediately after that show, she started putting on weight again. But she says that she laments her involvement with diet culture. And, yeah, yeah, of course, now she does it after the show's been off the air for like 15, 20 years. And, you know, she's got plenty of money now. But this is kind of a gray area because, on the one hand, yeah, you have to eat a sandwich. You can't just rely on, you know, juice, power shakes, and thinking, okay, I want to keep 50, 60 pounds off of me for the rest of my life, because that's just not good for your body. But what she was kind of getting into is, like, you know, this thought process now where we have to be comfortable with our bodies. All body types are to be celebrated, unless, of course, you are fit, then, you know, you're fat shaming. So she kind of feels bad for fat shaming people. I can't stand, like, when I was at the gym, I didn't really run into this Saturday, but I can't stand the guys and gals that are there, like, you know, that grunt and, you know, are training for a marathon when, and they have like 5% body fat, because you know that they break out into a sweat if somebody opens a bag of M&Ms around them. You know, like, they've told themselves, okay, discipline is key, discipline is key. I can't eat this. I can't have fun. Same time, you have the Lizzos in the world who say, we can't help being as fat as we are. And for you to make any mention of this is fat shaming. Even though you know that that's not good for their joints, not good for their backs, not good for their kidneys, not good for their livers, not good for their stomachs, not good for their hearts. You know, the point I'm getting at here is, yes, we should never have listened, and I never did, but to the teen magazines that said you had to be super thin, but we shouldn't be listening to the Lizzos of the world saying you can't, you shouldn't try to better yourself. I guess the thing I'm trying to get at here is, you know, eat better, be active, and just live life, you know, as best you can. You don't have to be at the gym 6 hours a day. Same time, you don't have to eat a bag of potato chips for breakfast. And Oprah kind of, you know, Oprah and her fad diets, yeah, looking back, kind of dumb. But fat shaming, I don't know, wanting to be better is nothing to be ashamed of, is what I'm getting at. If you're committed to it without being a psycho. All right, going from fat shaming to fatty fast foods in McDonald's and the economy, because we all know that's humming along just great. Like, you know, there's no such thing as inflation. Everything's nice, hunky-dory. You're not paying out the nose for groceries like you did. You know, everything's the same price as it was 4 or 5 years ago, right? Yeah, okay. McDonald's, because they are concerned about losing money due to the fact that people are scaling back on fast food. See, you don't have to eat fast food all the damn time, by the way. If you have that like once a week, fine. But learn to make a sandwich, you should be all right. You cut out all the grease there. Anyway, McDonald's is looking to make a $5 value meal again. Restaurants used to have these things where it's like, hey, if you're looking to save a buck, you know, for $5, get a sandwich, order fries, medium drink, $5, boom, you're good. McDonald's wants to do that again. I think they're owned by like 95% franchisees. The franchisees are pushing back on this because they would eat the cost on this. And a lot of the franchisees are saying a $5 value meal would make them lose money. It doesn't say anything about eating away profit, so to speak, but lose money. Like, the groceries it takes to make this food, they're saying they would lose money on, and the manpower, and the electricity and whatnot. Lose money on making a $5 value meal consisting of a cheeseburger or chicken sandwich, fries, and a medium soda. Think about that. Lose money on trying to make a $5 value meal. That's impossible nowadays. But McDonald's is looking at the long-term costs of not having something a little cheaper on the menu. And if people are scaling back, they're going to be losing money either way. But this shows kind of the divide between the corporate heads and the guys who run everything in the trenches. And yeah, nobody wants to lose customers, but everybody wants to make money. Kind of hard to do nowadays. Going on to the greatest city in America, San Francisco, and their economy is doing very well, as you know, San Francisco. This is a very shocking story, and by shocking, I mean, I'm not surprised that San Francisco has this. They have a thing called the Managed Alcohol Program, and I didn't know about this until like a couple days ago. There's a CEO out there named Adam Nathan. He runs a company called Blaze, and he's also a chair of the Salvation Army San Francisco Metro Advisory Board. And if you are part of the Salvation Army, you know about people down and out and that have dire needs and all this stuff. He went to social media talking about how like this managed alcohol program is something that San Fran spends $2 million on a year, and it provides alcohol to homeless people or unhoused people, depending on how sensitive you are, homeless people with alcohol problems. So they're giving all this alcohol to people that don't need it. He says, actually, 40% of the total cost of the four-year managed alcohol program is, he thinks that's just the 40, like the $2 million is just a fraction. He thinks that it actually costs the city $5 million. And he says that he went into one such shelter and saw a keg of beer there. How does this motivate, first of all, two things. How does this motivate somebody to give up alcohol when you're giving them alcohol? Secondly, has anybody on the San Francisco City Council ever been to a wedding with an open bar? You know how insane that is? Now you're telling people who don't work, hey, it's on us. And you're wondering why businesses are closing. You're pandering to people. You're doing the absolute worst thing you can do. And when you pander to people who have no motivation to do anything to better themselves, those who do want to better themselves are going to get the hell away from the city, as is happening right now. Speaking of free, that's what Belgian prostitutes aren't. They passed this new law saying that this past year that if you're a sex worker in Belgium, it's legal. You can do it without any repercussions. Well, almost. Apparently, if you're a prostitute and you work for a pimp, you can now only refuse sex 10 times in a 6-month span. That's right. It's kind of like if you work in a warehouse or a factory and you can refuse X amount overtimes per year. That's kind of what this is. So if a prostitute refuses like the 11th time and her pimp's got a problem, he goes to the government and they try to sort this out. So the government's become mega pimp or CEO pimp of Sex Work Inc. here. This sounds like sex trafficking. I know what you're saying. Well, they're not being forced to be prostitutes, are they? And I'm like, well, no, not yet. But now that the government's involved, and I'm sure they're going to get pieces of that sweet, sweet sex money, because that's what they do when they legalize pot here. They get that sweet, sweet pot money and use that just ever so responsibly. Yeah, so They're going to force women to have sex or drive them out or whatever. And this is probably why prostitution should not be legal. But what the hell do I know? This does not sound like women's rights at all. Good Lord. That sucks. Okay. I'm going to wrap it up. And I still have like a lot of stuff here. But this is a legal precedent that coincides with something I've always believed, and I'm glad somebody here in Northeast Indiana, here in the Fort Wayne area, has basically aligned political thinking along with my views. There is a restaurant here, a Mexican restaurant that wanted to open up, and some of the local neighbors are pushing back, saying, hey, we don't want fast food here. We only want deli style eateries. You go to the counter and you know, you order your sandwich, you get the hell out. Mexican food is not that. Well, the judge has determined by looking at the menu that yes, tacos and burritos can be considered sandwiches. I mean, a burrito is just a fancy sandwich wrap when you think about it. And as we're opening up this can of worms, I'm sure he believes the hot dog is a sandwich, as it always has been. There's no debate on this. Don't even write in to complain. And with that all said and done, I'm done. Till next time, stay
tuned. You've been listening to Mike Davidson Live. Be sure to check him out on social media. Like him at facebook.com/mdavidsonlives. Follow him on Twitter. Look for @DavidsonLives.